Okay, so we're doing continuing from yesterday about matana amnasachs here. So we have the halacha that the lulav has to be lachem, right? It has to be lachem. Oop, hold on a second. Who's that? Oh, Yona just got on. Okay, fine. So the question is, it has to be lachem. It has to be yours because taking the lulav is. Is like expressing, it's a certain action of controlling the object, or expressing a control over the object. And when you own it, so then it's expressing, realizing a relationship which existed prior. As opposed to if you don't own it, then there is no relationship, and the lakicha, the control, exists purely in the context of this isolated action. So that's good for the other days, but on the first day it has to be an expression of a prior or prior relationship. Okay, so you have to own it. Fine. And that relationship is not just a relationship of being an owner, of a monetary, a technical owner, but it's a relationship of shlita, of control over the thing. So therefore, if you're partners, then you don't really have the shlita. Therefore, it doesn't suffice. That's all good. So now we're talking about matanos manasachs here. So if I give you a gift, but I say it's yours on the condition that you return it back to me, the question is, is that sufficient for this mitzvah, for to write a yotze with the lulav, which is matan masa haksir to you? So the havin would be no, k'mashmalan, it works. It works. Okay. So the question is, what's havin oskana? Again, you could learn, it's a question whether matan masa haksir works altogether, even in terms of kinyan. But I'm not learning that. I'm learning that it means, in terms of kinyan, definitely it works. The question here is whether it works vis-a-vis lulav. I mean, it's interesting. The Rambam brings this halacha down by lulav, in hilchas lulav, not in hilchas matana. You know, whatever. I mean, maybe he has it also somewhere there, but... I mean, I'll read the Rambam. It says in it's in Chas Yud in Lulav. Ein adam yotze b'yanta frishon b'shal chag b'lulavah shal chavero shi'ashalenu imenu. Hachinen al matanas. You can't be yotze with your friend's lulav. They lend it to you, rather, until he gives it to you as a gift. Nosnu al manasach zero, but he gives it to you on the condition to return it back. Give it back. How is it yotze b'yichavasa mach zero? So then you could be yotze, and then you give it back. Shematan manasach haksir, shematan, because a matan manasach haksir counts as a matana. Counts as a gift. Right, so he says, because matana manasa achsir, shema matana. Right? But it sounds like this is a, there's a chiddush, in hilchas lulav. I mean, if it's just a natural thing in matana, then it's, I mean, I don't know, you could say that, but I mean, it sounds like that's a chiddush here. It's not just a chiddush in matana. It's a chiddush here in lulav.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, the Rambam also has it in mechira hey zayin. I mean, that it counts as a matana. In mechira, that's. I mean, he brings it down somewhere else also, but.
Right there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's also in Zechiyah Matana Gimel Tas. Okay. Okay, so let's just get the Hamina. So Matt's saying Hamina is that the whole idea of the Lachem means that it's your, you have a certain control over the object, and you're expressing that through your Lakicha. But here, since the ownership is really contingent on you giving it back afterwards, in a certain sense it lacks in your relationship to the object, lacks in your control over the object, because you really have a responsibility to give it back to the other guy. So your ownership is like, has like strings attached. So therefore you say it lacks in your control. So now it's, so therefore it lacks in the lacham. Right? It lacks in the expression of your control over the object. And the question is, that sounds good, so what's the maskana? I mean, in a certain sense, the basic way is, no, that doesn't lack. But what's the, why not? Sounds like a good point. Or you could say, well, Maskana, what's the difference between this case where it doesn't lack and the case where if you own it as a partnership, so then we say your control is lacking because you really have a shared ownership, so you don't have full control over the thing. So why is that different than over here? Whereas I'm Tana Manas Lach here. Maybe we'll come back to Amin a little bit. You know, so Sammy's bringing up a good point, is that yeah, but tech bottom line is, in the case of the partnership, so the nature of the ownership is a partnership ownership. That's the nature of the bailos. You're not really a baal, you're about your partner. But here, you're a full owner. Now, there's an extraneous thing that if I'm an owner, but if I don't do so-and-so, then my ownership is going to retroactively be dissolved. But whatever, but I plan on doing that so-and-so. So therefore, that so-and-so could be anything. I mean, you could have any term you want on the thing. You could sell it to the on the condition that I jump in the lake tomorrow. So you're not going to say that the vitalist, you can make an extraneous condition. The idea of Antal Manas Lahach here means that it's really a gift and it's yours. But the gift there's a condition that you have to fill so-and-so terms. Now, it's true that the terms are such that you end up giving it back and that you become, you undermine the ownership. But bottom line is, insofar as I do fulfill that condition, in that day or however many minutes that I had the thing, I was the real owner. It was mine as an owner. And I related to it as an owner, and I was able to use it as an owner. I had full rights on the thing as an owner. I had 100% control over the thing as an owner. So therefore, that it's a lakicha of an owner. I was expressing my relationship. But you still could argue, I think this is the point, as Matt was saying, is like, if you kind of look at it, so to speak, I mean, I don't use a bad word here, but like emotionally, like it doesn't, you don't feel like an owner. Like the bottom line is like, come on, do you really relate to this thing as an owner? I mean, technically you've worked out a manner in terms of the, in terms of the legalities of the thing that you created, you rendered yourself an owner. But basically, I'm the guy who bought the lulav, and I'm just giving it to you in a manner which gets around this technicality. So it's true, mechanistically, you're the owner. And your ownership is such that I worked out a way that you have to give it back to me. And it resembles exactly borrowing, because that's the way of borrowing is I'm giving it to you to use, and then you can give it back to me. But halachically, technically, I set it up in a way that it's actually a transfer of ownership temporarily. And I protected myself that you can't walk away with it because you retroactively will undermine the very gift. So what it's saying is that even though we're saying that the idea is that the lakicha, the mitzvah of lakicha's lulav is an expression of a relationship to the object, the relationship, you don't measure the relationship by how it feels. But you measure it based upon the shame bailus. And if the bailus is an ordinary bailus, so even if there's an extraneous removal, that doesn't undermine the relationship. But the case of the shutfin is a different kind of ownership. There are different types of ownership. So you say that it selects, the din of the relationship of lachem selects which type of relationship. It has to be a singular ownership as opposed to a partner ownership. But matal manas achzir isn't the kind of ownership. It's ownership is an ownership like any other ownership. It's just that I feel differently about it because the strings attached are very restrictive and they force me to give it up later. But bottom line is, technically speaking, it's 100% mine. So it could be that's what the Rambam brings it down, or the halacha is that this works because matana nasan achzir shma matana, that since it's considered a matana legally in terms of chosh mesh, but so therefore that's lacham. So the relationship is through lacham. Okay, so what you're going to do now is the Rush. Okay, so the Rush is, it's again on the Samachem with Beis, Simen Lamed Aleph. So it's a second column. So it says, Garcina Pregish Nochel, Mama Rabba Barav Huna, Ha'achim Shekhanu Esser with Tvizis Abayis, Nad Lechem Ehem V'yotzebo, Em Yachal Ochel Yotze, V'em Lav Lo Yotze. Okay. So basically, it's talking about these brothers who, I guess, they buy. Somehow, it's like a partnership. It's basically, they buy an esrog as like for the house or for the estate or something. So if one guy takes the esrog, one of the brothers take the esrog. So it depends. If he had the right to eat it, so then he's yotze. But if not, not. In other words, I guess sometimes when you have a partnership, you could have the terms of the partnership could be that each person has the right to just grab a fruit and eat it. Like I'll eat my one, you eat another, and that's the way it goes. And other times it works is that you have to really ask permission and you have to really get the say-so of the other partners. that's saying if he had full rights on this esrog, he was able to eat it, so that shows that he really has control over it. So then it's good for his mitzvah. Not. Okay. Shamas mishmai, not the honey bay trade this vine lulav vishot first, lo nafi de chavasa, biyamakama. So he says, you see from here that if two people buy a lulav as partners, so you can't use it for the mitzvah on the first day until you give it as a gift. So you put a gift, your portion, to your friend. Okay, so far so good. So far it's what we know about. Now he says, but there's a minhag in certain towns where the esrogs are not very common, that the whole community, the whole Jewish community, buys one esrog, and they all yotze with it, right? They buy it as partners, and they're yotze with it. So how does that work? Because you tell me you have to own it. So there's a question from the story on the halacha. Is everyone doing the wrong thing? So Pirush Rashbam, Kivan de Kanehu al Minas Lotzeis Bo, since you are buying it on the town, the community is buying it for the condition, on the purpose of being Yotze their mitzvah with it, fulfilling their mitzvah, Stama de Milsa Havikilu Pirshu, Shekala Kol Nosen and Chalkam Lemishenotel Mubarak Bo, Amanas Azirulan. So therefore, it's like the Minastam, the assumption is, it's as if they specified that every person in the community is giving their portion to whoever takes it and makes a bracha on it as a gift, al menas lahachzir, on the condition to return it. Okay, so it's like as if they specified that we all agree that we'll give it up, whoever Mr. So-and-so is taking it right now, so we're all gifting it to him. And then when the next guy takes it, we're all gifting it to him. And then the next guy takes it, we're all giving it to him. But not a gift, we don't actually give it to him, because maybe he'll walk off with it. So it's a matan al manas lahachzir. We're giving it as a gift on the condition that he returns it back. Okay. Why? How do we just say that? Right, they didn't specify it. That's not the case. If we had said that, if that was the case, then it wouldn't have been a question. We could say kiven the beinyan acher in yichol latzes, because since the whole there's no other way that they yotze the mitzvah. So since they bought the esrog on the condition, in the terms, and in order to be yotze the mitzvah, so he's saying is therefore obviously that's what they meant. That's what they meant to do it. They didn't mean to buy it to have a ownership which is going to be restrictive of everybody else, such that no one else has any rights on it, then no one will be able to do the mitzvah. So therefore, it's like the Stam Das, when they bought it, it was that it was under those terms. Even though they didn't know it in particular, but they knew that they were buying it for the purpose of being Yotzei the mitzvah, and that's what that means. Being Yotzei for the purpose of Yotzei the mitzvah means that you're buying it under those terms. Okay? It's interesting how that works, but that's what he's saying. He says, V'nishal Rav Shri Ragon alza. Okay, and they asked Rav Shri Ragon. They asked someone else. He's a Gon. They asked him about this. Makom she'in esrog v'lulav mitzuyim. In a place where there's not very a lot of lulav and esrog. Z'govin mikol akal min kol achad. You collect money from everybody. V'konum achad. You buy... One of them buys it, and note lo chazan beisak nesses biyada v'shas halal, and the chazan of the shul takes it during the halal, mubarach alav, and nosel is a canim, and then he gives it to the other guys, mubarach and alav. B'shev note lo kol echad mechavero, ajim mubarach alav kol akal, yazvich wasn't alo, and then everybody takes it, and you pass it around, so does this work or does it not work? V'heshev, and he answered, v'adai b'shar yimos achag, yom shen v'halay yitzich v'asim v'asul alav. Definitely on the second day, there's no problem, of course, because you don't have to own it. Aval b'yom rishon tzarech kol echad ve'echad lito lulav shelo. But on the first day, everybody has to take their own lulav. V'chein roi shetasu. And therefore, it's appropriate that they do the following. Lios konim halulav le'echad min hatzibor. That they should be give it, transfer it to one guy in the tzibor. O shi'it chenu mimimono, or they should buy it from his property. O shi'it nu da adamim the chazan matana, or you give it to that guy as a gift. Who yiknehu l'atzmo, and he'll be kona for himself. U'biyam arishon yiknehu b'matana lechem n'nezkenim, and the first day he gives it as a gift to one of the other guys. V'chalechad yiknehu l'achar matana, and every guy would give it to the other guy as a gift. Adjiyavu yilekulam, until everybody gets it. V'nogu b'ashkenaz v'tzofet k'rashbam. But in Ashkenaz and in Tzarfas, we are knowing like the Rashbam. Okay, we do like the Rashbam. So what's the difference between the Rashbam and the Rosh Hashanah? If you're following. But yeah, I mean, I think the difference is that according to the Rashbam, you don't have to do anything. You just basically pass it around, and it's assumed. It's as if they stipulated that. But they don't have to, like, make a deal. They don't have to say, okay, I'm gifting it to you, I'm gifting it to you. They just hand it around. And it's clear that that's what's going on. That's their assumed das. But according to Rosh Hashanah, what he's saying is that one guy has to buy it, then he has to gift it to the next guy, then he has to gift it to the next guy, then you have to keep going around gifting it. So it seems like, according to Rosh Hashanah, it has to actually be explicit that this is what's going on. It's not sufficient just to just pass it around and say, hey, this is obviously what's happening. It seems like you really have to make everything explicit, according to him. Right? So that's... That seems to be like the Chiddush, or it seems to me like the what's name is a little bit more of a Chiddush even, the Rashbam, that it works to like somehow automatically. But the question is, what's the Machlokas? What's the Machlokas? Yeah, I mean, you could ask a question is like, how do you just assume that's their das? I mean, in general, I mean, I don't know if it was in my shiur, I forgot when it was, but in general, there's a principle, dvarim shebelev einan dvarim, that in Kenyan, when you purchase something, so that which you're thinking doesn't register. The terms of the Kenyan are those terms which are explicit, not those terms which you're thinking in your head. Okay, like if I buy something for you and I have in my mind, oh yeah, it's conditional on so-and-so. Buy your house. It's conditional on that I get a mortgage. I mean, it's very nice. So I'm thinking that, but if it's not explicit, then it's not explicit. Like, I don't know if that's the best example because of what I'm about to say. So in theory, you could say that's a problem. So how do you just say that's what they're thinking? Well, did they say it? They didn't say that. But I think the answer to that is also something we did in Kedushin, is that there's something which is believe everybody, which is assumed that everybody has that assumption. You don't have to stipulate. So I think an example was, if a guy in his deathbed gives away all his money, every last cent, to his somebody as a gift, and then he ends up living. So it's clear that nobody would do that, and no one in their right mind gives away all their stuff if they end up going to be alive. So therefore, they don't have anything to eat. So therefore, it's clear that when a person does that, that he's assuming it's on the condition that he passes on. Okay, that's an assumption. Because, he didn't stipulate it. No, but that's clear. Anybody. You know, the idea is because if you don't state it, then it's not objectified. It's, who says? Maybe not. So you have to make the terms clear. But if something is clear that anybody in their right minds would do it, so then it's already clear from the action. The action of giving away all your money on your deathbed speaks volumes of the fact that it's that you're only doing it on the condition that you're going to die, because otherwise you're leaving yourself penniless. So therefore, that's sufficient. So in Dine Mominus, that works. Something which is clear from the context, not open to interpretation. If it's open to interpretation, you have to be explicit. But if it's clear from the context, then it's clear. So therefore, it would seem the Rosh is making use of that kind of a thing, is that since here it's clear, no one's buying. Why is the tzibor? Why is the whole community buying an esrog? So clearly they're buying it for the mitzvah, and for the mitzvah they're buying it in order to fulfill the mitzvah, and filling the mitzvah means to do it under these conditions. So therefore, even though they're not making it explicit or whatever, it's clear that this is what they're doing. They're buying it in a manner with which they'll fulfill the mitzvah. Even though, it's interesting, even though not every guy knows this halacha and understands this is the way to do it, but it's saying still, they're buying it as a mitzvah object. They're paying $100 for it, not because it's a very good fruit. They're buying it as a mitzvah object, and therefore the guys who know the terms, other guys know they're buying it in whatever manner it will suffice for the mitzvah, and that's good enough. But Rosh Hashanah doesn't like it for some reason. I mean, the question is, what's the machlokas? Okay, so I'm thinking something which is kind of similar to the previous story we just said about Matan Manas L'Achzir, but we'll see how it goes. So So I think what's interesting here is that you're saying is that technically speaking, this is their Stam Das. Right? Their Stam Das is that the assumed the das is that they're buying it as a, you know, as part as a singular matana amanas achzir, because there's no other way for them to yosei the mitzvah. But if you would ask a random fellow in the shul, so you'd say, "Oh, is this your lulav?" He'll say, "Oh no, it's the shul's lulav. We bought it as partners, right?" He doesn't know that that's the case. The case is talking about the shul lulav. The Rashbam is just saying is that the idea of the shul lulav is a lulav which the whole shul could be yotze with, and the only way that works is through this idea of matana masa achzir, and therefore that's the stam das, that's what's happening halachically. So my das, even though I don't know about it, my das is a das of a pert kinyan of the mitzvah, and therefore that is the way, only way for it to be a kinyan of mitzvah. So I technically, legally, I have that type of kinyan, but I don't know about it. As far as I'm concerned, I think I really am owning it as a partner. So the question is, does that work? Does that work? Do you have to know about it? And the reason why is because the whole idea of saying you need lachem is because we're saying is that the lakicha has to be of a certain character that's expressing a pre-existing relationship. But now here, the relationship which is expressing is unknown to the guy who's taking it. So technically that relationship exists, but you can say that you can't argue that this lakicha is an expression of that relationship because there's no connection between the lakicha of me, my lakicha, and the underlying relationship because I don't even know about that relationship. So when I take it, it's the taking of a partner, not the taking of a single owner. Even though, technically speaking, I am a single owner. I'm not doing that lakicha because I don't even know about that, the fact that I'm a single owner. So the question is like, do you say that the lakicha has to have the character of a lakicha of shlita, of a single controlling owner? That is the characteristic of the lakicha itself has to have that? Or do you say no? Is that that's the reason, that the idea behind this requirement of lacham is because of the idea that it has to be an expression of shlita. But technically speaking, it's you're doing a lakicha on a chafza, which you have bailus on. And as long as you have the bailus, technically, and you're doing lakicha on it, then halachically it's sufficient. Okay, the Rashbam is arguing is that, so to speak, the idea of the control in the relationship is the idea behind the mitzvah, but halachically it's set up that you must be, your lakicha must be based upon an owner. Lakicha must be based upon the singular ownership. Okay, but it's halachified. It's formalized insofar as the demand demands a certain type of ownership. But this is that type of ownership. I don't know about it, but as long as it is that ownership. And the Tanas on Achzi also is that ownership. What ownership means? It's singular ownership. So I have it. But the Sri Ragon argues that since the whole function of the ownership is in order to characterize the lakicha, the ownership has to impact the lakicha and make it a lakicha of a baal. That character of a taking, the taking of expressing my shlita. And since I'm my control, since I don't know about my singular control, so therefore the lakicha can't have that characteristic. It's like, how much is that idea of the underlying relationship, how much is that incorporated into the halacha? Is that basically responsible for demanding lachem and demanding what type of bailus? But now halachically, it's just lakicha upon which, you know, based upon that bailus? Or do you say that has to actually characterize the lakicha? But either way, I'd say is matama nasahachsia works, because if it goes by the ownership, then you're the owner. And even if it goes by the relationship, I know that I'm the full owner. So it's true, I may feel funny about it because I have to give it back to it in a few minutes or whatever, but I know that the relationship is full, I have full shlita on the thing, like what Sammy was arguing, there's a full owner, a full relationship on the thing right now. And the fact that I have to return it is extraneous. Yeah, I mean, I guess, so again, according to the second way, according to the, who is it? This is according to, to Rosh Hiragon, who demands the relationship. It's not just enough to have technical ownership, but you must have the lekicha of a shlita. So you're going to have to say the question by Matan Asahachsir is like, do you say the fact... See, by Matan Asahachsir, technically speaking, you have full shlita over it. But and you know you do. You know you have full shlita over it. But it's limited. It's limited in time based on an extraneous mechanism. So you'd have to say the question there is, does that take away from the lekicha of shlita? Technically speaking, you say there's no reason why it has to. Because, look, you do have full shlita over it right now. But do you argue that the character, the fact that it's temporary undermines the character of the lekicha? Or you say, no, that doesn't matter. Temporary is, since the temporary is extraneous, it's not like I'm borrowing it, I own it, but with the external, you know, the mechanism that makes it temporary, so therefore still the lekicha has that character. The fact that it's temporary doesn't undermine the characteristic. I mean, that's according to him what you would say that case is teaching you. Okay, so we already read the Gemara we're going to do next time. I guess tomorrow should be. But I just want to emphasize the questions because there's another point. Is that so? It says a story of Rabbi Gamliel. The story is that they bought this lulav for 1,000 zuz and they only had one of them, and they transferred it from Rabbi Gamliel to Rabbi Yeshua to whatever, the whole thing. So the question Mary asks, why do you have to tell us that he bought it for 1,000 zuz? Who cares? Isn't that extraneous? Is that really necessary to tell us as part of the story? So the Gemara says it teaches you how much he loved the mitzvahs. Kama mitzvahs chavivas alayim. How much they loved the mitzvah that he was willing to spend 1,000 zuz on the mitzvah. So Tosus, Rekiva Eger, the Gilein Hashas, if you look on the left side under the bottom shish kebab, he sends you to Baba Kama, Tesama Beis. Tosus, Ilema. And the Tosus there says, he says, basically from the Gemara over there, it seems to say that you don't have to spend, it says, b'mitzvah ad shlesh. It says, by mitzvah, you spend up until a third. Okay, and the Gemara says, what does it mean, shlesh? If it means the shlesh, a third of your of all your assets, turn out if you have three mitzvahs, then you can basically give up all your assets. That's crazy. So it says, no, it means hidur mitzvah ad shlesh b'mitzvah. So it means hidor, the halacha of hidor being a nice mitzvah, you spend a third above the mitzvah. So if the mitzvah costs $30, the basic object costs 30, so then hidor you do a third of 30 is 10, an extra 10. Okay? Whatever. But the point is, that's one way to calculate it. But the point is that you see from this Gemara that you're not chayiv to spend a third of your stuff on a mitzvah. There's a limit to how much you chayiv to spend on a mitzvah. So that's what Tosfos says. Mashna Einsoch Lavazia is Kalmona Liknos Esrog. You have to spend all your money and go poor in order to buy an Esrog. I feel Liam said Bachz, even if you can't find the cheaper one. That's it. There's a limit to how much you have to buy Mitzvah. I feel Shosh Beis Mashna Lucha. You're not even chayv to spend a third. Right? It says a person wants to spend, even a person wants to spend a lot of money on Stucco. You shouldn't spend more than a fifth. So you see, there are limitations in Mitzvah. You know, there's a limit to how much you chayv to spend on Mitzvahs. He says, "Aye, but now Gemara says ubesukah chashiv le'rabusa derigam liel shakana esrog be'alav zuz. But in sukkah, it's treated, it's like a chiddush that derigam liel bought an esrog for 1,000 zuz. So, if you told me that you're chayiv to spend all your money on a lula on an esrog, so then what do you have to tell me? Derigam liel loved mitzvah so much that he spent $1,000. It's of course you're chayiv to. So you see, apparently from this Gemara, that you're not chayiv to." That really, if it costs 1,000 zuz, you're not chayiv to spend it. And therefore, it's telling you, oh, but Rav Gamliel loved the mitzvah so much that he did spend it. So the question is, though, so why did he? Right? I mean, if you tell me in general, you're not chayiv to do it, and then in general, that's halacha, you're not supposed to spend more, it says like, wait, tzedakah, you're not supposed to spend more than a fifth of your stuff on tzedakah. So what is this idea of Rav Gamliel? Why did he do it? And you might say, look, I'm not chayiv to spend it on potter. So what's the idea here? What's the idea of Rav Gamliel being an exception? I mean, Tosfos isn't really explaining that. I mean, Kivega is sending you there, but I mean, it's saying he loved Nitzah so much. What's that idea? Okay, another question is it says you're allowed to hold the lulav during Shemana Esrei, during the davening, because it's mitzvah. Okay, so therefore you're not going to be even though you're not allowed to carry anything else during davening because it's heavy and you're going to be worrying about dropping it and you're not going to be able to have kavana, here, since it's a mitzvah, so therefore you're allowed to. Okay, and therefore it's not going to be, since it's a mitzvah, to take it, and you love the mitzvah, therefore it's not going to be heavy and you're not going to be bothered. The question is, how does that work? I mean, bottom line is, it's still heavy. The fact that it's a mitzvah and you love it, like, well, yeah, but bottom line is, it should be a distraction. You're holding it. And the third thing it says, the men of God, Yerushalayim, they used to carry around the lulav all day long. It shows you how Zoras they were in the mitzvah. They'd carry around the mitzvah all day long. They'd go to shul, they'd carry it. They'd go visit people, they'd carry it. They'd be carrying around all day long, the people of Yerushalayim. So the question is, but what do you mean? But once you're Yotzei the Mitzvah, Yotzei the Mitzvah, what's this idea? Right? Why? What's this idea of being Zoras in the Mitzvah they carry around all day long? Why not say, look, Yotzei the Mitzvah, that's it, you're done. Like, what's the deal? Right? They did this, and it's the whole list of all the things they did. They went to Shul, they went to Laney, they visited the sick, they visited, I mean, what's the point? It shows how Zoras they were in Mitzvah, so who cares about this whole thing? Okay? So hopefully we'll take these up tomorrow. And I wanted to do the Sefer Chinuch on Lulav. Because these things are all by Lulav. The question is, do you say all these things by other stuff, or something to do with Lulav uniquely? So I want to look at Mitzvah, Sefer Chinuch, Mitzvah Shin Chav Dalet in the Chinuch. He kind of talks about Lulav a little bit. Alrighty? Any questions?